Hello, this is Harvey Daniels, also known as Smokey Daniels, co-author of Comprehension and Collaboration, Inquiry Circles in Action, with my buddy and colleague, Stephanie Harvey. Today I'm on the phone with two beloved colleagues, Debbie King and Michelle Temple from Burley School in Chicago. This is a school that we kind of discovered in the middle of writing this book and became very excited about, rushed right up to Chicago and visited and just were knocked out by this amazing faculty who appear in some key places in the book and also in a video that's coming out around November 1st of 2009 to support the book. So good morning, Debbie and Michelle.
Good morning, Smokey. How are you?
Good morning.
Hey, it's so nice to be with you. Great to be with you. I thought maybe we could start out by you guys maybe just saying a little bit about what your teaching assignment is at Burley and maybe a little bit about what kind of school Burley is.
Sure. This is my name is Debbie, obviously, just like Smokey said, and I teach fourth grade at Burley. I've been teaching fourth grade for about the past 7 or 8 years, but I've taught grades from fourth all the way through seventh. I have the fortunate opportunity, the fact that I teach with my sister. Michelle and I have been teaching together for a long time, and so Michelle and I both teach fourth grade. So I'm Michelle, and I've been teaching at Burley, I think, for 8 years. Burley is an urban school in Chicago. We're very lucky to have a diverse population. I think we're diverse in many ways, both ethnicity and socioeconomic, and the group of teachers who have come together at Burley are very like-minded, and we have similar goals, and we have a great administration that kind of guides our ship. And so we've been lucky to be working with Inquiry for the last couple of years, and I feel like we've made some great improvements, and our kids are doing some pretty amazing things.
They surely are, and they really are, and I'm so lucky to have had a chance to spend, what, maybe, I don't know, 8 or 9 days with you this spring doing different things at the school, and it's pretty spectacular. So you guys were already doing some really good teaching before Steph and I ever wrote this book or before this book ever landed in your lives, but I wondered, how did the book fit in for you when we wrote this thing about comprehension and collaboration going together?
Well, first of all, when I heard about the book, the book started coming to us, I think we were, Michelle and I were giddy because we're like Stephanie Harvey and Smokey Daniels together in the same book. I mean, what more could we ask for? I mean, both of your works independently are like everywhere in our classroom. You know, I think if you walk in there, you would see the literature circle stuff and you would walk in there and see the comprehension stuff. Comprehension strategies. So the idea that both of you were, you know, getting together on this book was just like, you know, heaven for us. And then the other thing I think that was kind of, you know, serendipitous for us a little bit was that Inquiry was something that we've been playing with for a long time. But it is something that kind of was always got pushed to the back burner for us as far as like, how can we improve it? How can we get this going more? Because we didn't feel actually like there were a lot of great books on there. We had read Nonfiction Matters that Steph had wrote a long time ago and those kind of things. But we hadn't hit on a book like we had for Reader's Workshop and Writer's Workshop and Lit Circles and things like that. We hadn't found the book that kind of helped push us in this area of inquiry, which we definitely need pushing in.
We needed some help. You know, we had been doing it for a while, but we were hitting some problems. And so, like, there were a lot of books about the idea of it, but not too many about teachers actually doing it and how they were navigating, you know, the struggles. And there were a lot of struggles.
What were some of the problems that you guys were facing with inquiry-based teaching?
I think when we first started teaching Smoke, one of our first struggles was resources. You know, how do you get kids, you know, lots of Chicago public schools, you know, have a social studies textbook and a science textbook. We were at Burley where those things didn't exist, and we were thrilled that they didn't exist. I think as, you know, for new teachers, but even for us, you know, gathering resources for these kids to, you know, to be able to investigate and research, that was one of the initial things. Now, we overcame that pretty quick, right? I mean, grants,
right.
And we were fortunate enough that our principal doesn't, you know, stand at the helm of our ship and order things for us. Teachers do the ordering and things like that. So Michelle and I quickly were, like, gathering in resources that connected to our curriculum and the standards and things like that. So I said resources was one of the initial problems we had, right? But in these effects, you know. But then I think we had the problem that is so well defined in the book, and that's one of the things we were so excited about, is that a lot of times our inquiry circles were falling short, you know, like that you know, the whole project design would be, you know, less than we had hoped for, or that a few members on a team were really struggling and not pulling their weight and doing their part. And I think that's one of the things that I really got excited about the design of the book, that there was that collaboration piece. Because although it was very present in our classrooms, we weren't making it a huge part of our inquiry circles, which, you know, now seems like, well, duh, you know. And so that really was a light bulb moment for us, where we were like, oh, you know, here we are doing these, you know, how to get along kind of things in the beginning of the school year. And then we, you know, we're pretty good. We do them throughout the year too. But we weren't specifically teaching them how to get along when there's this big project design in front of you and this big, you know, question in front of you. And, you know, we did a little bit of it in the beginning of the year and then just basically focused more on the content and the comprehension, you know, strategies and those kinds of things.
Yeah. Well, you said a lot there, Michelle, and that, you know, first of all, I think there are teachers all over the place, most definitely including me, that have had these projects crash and burn. You know, we have the ambition to do inquiry work, and we want kids to choose their own topics and investigate stuff they really care about and go deep with it and spend time on it. And yet, as you know, noble as our ambitions are, sometimes we didn't have all the tools and strategies and management techniques together that we needed to have it sustain. And then these things of the loose energy and crash and burn, we've all had kids doing sort of extended projects that ended up kind of disappointing us or flopping in some way. So I feel like that's something, it's a mission we've all been on for a really long time, almost everybody who teaches, trying to figure out a way for kids to get engaged in extended, energizing, productive inquiries. And so it's, you know, it's been a quest, and that's, you know, in a certain way, sometimes think that's one way of saying what the book is about, projects that work. How do we have, I think it shows a good instinct of ours when we want to engage kids in sort of these sustained inquiries, because we're all trapped in this, you know, this curriculum of mentioning that we live with, you know, where we have to cover the material for the test and cover, and we feel like we're always skimming over everything.
And the teacher who follows you says, oh, you never taught that. Oh, I did, but I just covered it.
Yeah.
I don't remember it.
And even when we're covering, we kind of know that we're covering it like a painter paints a wall, you know, a thousandth of an inch thick, and paint's peeling off the second it goes on. And it's like the kids maybe remember what we taught until the quiz on Friday, or maybe, you know, maybe not. Even that, but by Monday for sure it's gone. So this hunger to do these projects is, again, I think it's a really healthy instinct. But we've had to keep working over years and years and years, I think, to try to figure out what are the tools, what are the structures, what are the procedures, what are the supports and scaffolds that make it possible for kids to undertake that kind of thinking. You mentioned, Michelle, about at the beginning of the year, it sounded like you were talking about teaching kids sort of social skills or collaboration skills so that they could do these kinds of projects in groups. And obviously that's a big part of this book. We think that's one of the sort of fresher contributions that it makes, getting a lot more specific about how you prepare kids to work together. And I know you guys invest a lot in the beginning of the year to, you know, seriously create a community of people that can work together. And can you say a little bit about that, about how you go about doing that community building?
Yeah, you know, it's a big goal of ours at Burley. We know that the kids, in order to do this great work, need to be able to get along and knowing each other helps that process. And so all the teachers at Burley spend a lot of time kind of moving that along. And Debbie and I start with, you know, like with a lesson called The Ideal Classroom. And we say to the kids, what is the ideal classroom look like, feel like, and sound like, you know, and they're really good at coming up what it sounds like, you know, no yelling, you know, lots of laughter, they say, you know, and sometimes quiet time. They're really good at that part. And even looks like, you know, at Burley, we take our learning environments very seriously. We know that they have to be set up in a way that's conducive to these, you know, group meetings and, you know, peer-to-peer interactions. And so they're by the time they get to fourth grade, they're pretty good at identifying that. But what they don't have a language for is what it's supposed to feel like. And so we do a lot of lessons about how, you know, we talk about how, you know, they're in school for so many hours, it's almost like you're home away from home, and how are you supposed to feel when you're at home? And we have this one line where, you know, do you sing in your shower? Yeah, well, why aren't you singing here? Well, because I'm comfortable at home, I'm safe at home, you know, my mom knows my singing voice, you know. And so we talk about how we're trying to establish that level of comfort in this classroom, too, so that you can take the big risks that we need you to take throughout the year.
You know, I don't mean to interrupt, but I've got to tell you a story because it's such a great fit. In our book, we talk about the idea of home court advantage. You guys have seen that.
I
love that
lesson.
Yeah,
great.
Yeah, Nancy Steineke's class at Andrew High School, not too far from you guys,
right.
And in her high school classes at the beginning of the year, she does this wonderful activity where she brings in sports standings in the newspapers, standing little charts that show that by and large teams win more games at home than they do when they're on the road. She hands it out to the kids and have them talk in groups. Why do they think that teams win more games at home than they do on the road? And typically the kids come up with things like, well, you know, all your friends are there supporting you and you feel safe, and if you make a mistake, nobody boos you. And what they do is they turn that around to become, those are the rules of the class. A class is supposed to be a place where you have home court advantage, home field advantage. And these high school kids, it sounds kind of goofy, but they actually then go ahead and make posters about what home court means to them, and they put those posters up on the wall, and they're up all year long. And whenever any put-downs occur or kids start to get weird toward each other, all they have to do is kind of nod their head toward the wall and say, home court. And so cool, that connection, that a strategy that you guys use in elementary, you know, same basic idea for high school.
And when I think of, so, like, I love that Nancy's doing that with high school students, because I kind of think two things happen. One is I think primary teachers, Smokey, are really good about, you know, building community in their classrooms. And I think there's this feeling like as kids get older, you don't need to do that anymore. And it's so not true. It's the same thing with the school year. I think, you know, you kind of think, I think most teachers do a lot of community building in the beginning of the year, and, you know, they do these getting to know you activities, and then it stops. At least that's how it was for me when I first started teaching. It's like, okay, I know everything I need to know by October. Well, it's just not, you know, these are things that need to happen throughout the year. You know, it's not like, okay, I've taught collaboration in October and I'm done, you know.
So true. And we've got, and a lot of the social skills lessons that are in the book really stress that. One of them, we talk about the membership grid is talks about investing, you know, 5 minutes of every day, always, all year long, sustaining kids' friendliness and support in the classroom, which means just what you said. We're never done teaching, practicing, reinforcing social skills. We have to stay at it. This is one of the reasons those old projects that we did when we put kids in groups and said, go study something, would so often crash and burn, because we truly didn't have that foundation of friendliness and support built strongly enough to carry those projects forward. So I remember, too, this makes me think about going into your classrooms, you guys, and seeing those classroom compacts on the wall.
Yeah, that's another thing we do. Obviously, every classroom kind of does their what are the rules we're going to live by. But what we've done, and Michelle and I have done in our classrooms, and other teachers at Burley's for sure have done this too, is we've got a classroom compact. It's something that comes from the lesson that Michelle talked about the ideal classroom, and it's kind of this agreement that the kids and I, of course, co-create. And it's just this kind of idea. We all sign it as if it's a contract between us, and we just promise that this is how we're going to live. And that's one of the pieces. And then, again, as you said, we refer back to that often. If we have somebody new come to the class, or if we have visitors come to the classroom, we refer back to it. And kids refer back to it. That, you know, if something's going wrong, they're like, okay, well, that's not helping to create a peaceful classroom. And so they refer back to that. That's one of the pieces, I think. I think another thing is, Michelle spoke a little bit about the environment, you know, the fact that there are couches and pillows and places for kids to curl up. And we even have this
we have photos all over the room, you know, of in the beginning of the year, the kids bring in a family photo, a photo, obviously, of them with their family doing, you know, on some, usually it's like some trip they took or just some, you know, family event. But just like you have, you know, photographs of your family at home, we too want the photographs around our classroom. And then throughout the year, we add to those photos, like, remember when we did this inquiry project, or remember when we were reading this read aloud. And so we add to that. So the, you know, it's everything, Smokey. It's the, you know, explicit teaching of collaboration. It's the classroom environment. It's the curriculum. Like, I feel strongly like that teachers kind of put their hands on their hips and say, gosh, you know, these kids can't get along, or they, you know, they come up early and they think our kids are different. And it's like, it's just about teaching with this intention of we're going to get along. We're going to care about each other, because that's how we need it to be in the world, real world. You know, it's not just about school. That's what I want them to do when they leave us, too, you know, so. And it's also a little bit about, you know, you had mentioned the membership grid as one of my favorite lessons, and Debbie and I use that a lot, and we had been using it a lot with our literature circles, and then, of course, you know, as soon as we got the book, we started infusing it into our inquiry circles as well. But the kids are so, like, they expect that kind of stuff in September, and then when you're so willing to take the time to do that in October and November, they're surprised, and they're honored by it, you know, like they figure out that I know it's important, and they value it in each other. And it's a little bit about the teacher walking the talk, you know, like you can't say community is important and then never dedicate any time to it for the rest of the year. And, you know, just how you respond to the kids, you know, that I, you know, if, that I don't let the smartest kid in my room dominate the discussions just because I know he'll get it right and it's easier for me. You know, that I shut him down every once in a while and let someone else talk. The kids look at you with eyes wide open like, oh my gosh, this is going to be a different school year, you know? And so I think it's a lot about how we're interacting with them and the ways in which we speak to, you know, the kids, but even each other. I think the kids look to Debbie and I a lot in our interactions with each other. And I think they get a lot from that.
Yeah, this is so interesting because this is a big sort of a discovery for all of us about how explicit we have to be about teaching social skills and sustaining that community, not just setting it up but keeping it going. And it's sort of, I often think, what's one of the things I think that's interesting about the book is that a lot of us have been out here for any number of years teaching comprehension strategies, right? We've been teaching inferring and synthesizing and determining importance and visualizing and so forth. We've been teaching those explicitly to kids. It was an eye-opener for us when that stuff came along, but, you know, we've been doing it pretty systematically for a while now. But teaching social skills explicitly, not so much. You know, this is a little new. We're just learning about, and it's, to me, it's amazing that those two things sort of, they line up together. You know, proficient readers have a repertoire of cognitive strategies that they use in order to understand what they read, and proficient collaborators have a repertoire of strategies that they use in order to work effectively together with other people, like speaking up, like disagreeing agreeably, like being responsible to the group, and so forth. And they're really kind of parallel. And there's these two sets of mostly unconscious strategies that we use in order to get work done. So, but you know,
I know some teachers who are listening are going to say, I don't have time to teach collaboration. You know, I've got a test in March, you know. I mean, there's such a huge payoff, you know. I mean, it's worth the time, not just for your students within your school year, but, I mean, going back to the idea that, you know, these kids are going to be in the workforce someday. And, you know, who hasn't been on a team as a worker with someone who was dysfunctional? And wouldn't it be great if you give them a few more tools before they get there?
Right. Well, just for a second, looping back to comprehension strategies, you know, that another pillar of the work, of course. One thing is getting kids being able to work together. Another huge thing is being sure the kids are able to understand and remember and apply and maybe even care about what they read. So, but you guys have been doing the strategies work for a while, right, when this came along?
Yeah, that's definitely something we felt like we saw ourselves in the book. You know, we felt that's something that's been at Burley for a long time. I think it first came for me from Mosaic of Thought. You know, I was teaching, I was using literature, I was doing lit circles, But I didn't have the lessons. I knew I wanted kids to think. I knew I wanted kids to talk with each other about their books, but I didn't know how to get them to do that, you know? And so I was struggling a lot with that.
It was a little bit like Debbie and I, you know, were really good at teaching the book, but not the reader. Like, I was really good at Talk Everlasting, and every one of my students knew that book inside and out, and, you know, but it was more about the book and less about the students. And the strategy work really helped shift us to getting it more important than just this one book. But what do readers do when we interact with text? And making that thinking visible, you know, was so important for us.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that this book does, it kind of builds on the strategies inventory repertoire, which is, you know, which is well established, in which lots and lots of teachers are, you know, we have it in our DNA now, and kids are learning it too. But it really, what we're talking about in this moment is really about moving further down the continuum of comprehension. You know, we, in the old days, we used to just have kids answering literal questions, factual recall, and doing retellings. But there's a lot of school districts in the country where you could look at what they do with reading, and that's the limit, that's the end, answering factual recall questions and doing retellings. And we argue in the book that comprehension doesn't even begin there. Comprehension doesn't begin until kids merge their own thinking with the text and begin to acquire knowledge. And I think what we hope we've added to this, the continuum, is the idea that some of the time we'd like the kids to go on from building knowledge to actually caring and being interested and committed and excited about the content that they're learning, and sometimes to take action to do something in the world that results from their, you know, their learning about issues that need attention.
Yeah, definitely. One of the things that I love is that, you know, we're starting with modeling our own inquiry. The fact that, listen, we're all filled with questions. We've grown-ups, we don't have all the answers, you know. We still have questions. That's part of our, you know, not just our curriculum or our life, but that's one of the things I loved about the book. I think that you reminded me about, Smokey, was, and I think, like, teachers get into it for this reason, right? We like learning. We like, you know, kids. And we ourselves are like these lifelong learners. But I think when we get into the business of school, we forget this idea of curiosity. You know, this, like, I love the idea that this book might actually make curiosity cool again. You know, bring curiosity back into the classroom. I think with this test movement and the standards movement and all the pressures we've been under, that they come to us naturally curious. There's no doubt about it. You know, I've got a 5-year-old who proves that to me every day, you know. But something happens in the business of school that I think we have to stop and think as teachers a little bit, that we're squashing kind of this curiosity, natural, you know, this natural curiosity they have, and it makes me a little sad, you know. So
yeah, you know, it's funny. One of our many working titles for this book was Kids Want to Know.
I love that.
Kids Want to Know. And it would, you know, totally, I think we would be completely satisfied if this book helped cause the slightest rebirth in the idea of, you know.
Give me goosebumps, Smokey, because that's, like, I think what is, you know, that's the stuff that's important. Like, you know, we're stressed out about all this other stuff. But if, as you said, if kids walk out, you know, knowing that their curiosity is, you know, worthwhile and that their questions matter, what a gift, you know, I think.
And if teachers get up and share their curiosity, that's even better.
Yeah.
That's
been a big, that's one thing that I think it's brought back for Michelle and I, like, it's reminded us of that. You know, your book gives lots of entry points, Smokey. If you've never done inquiry, this book will help you. If you're doing it and you're dabbling in it and a little bit, it's gonna push you. And even if you think you're an expert on it, it's gonna make you stop and think about stuff, so.
Well, thanks for that endorsement. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, the depth in this stuff and the complexity of it is way higher level. I agree. The activism piece, Smokey, is actually a place where Michelle and I are pushing ourselves this coming year. You know, that's an area that we haven't really dabbled in. We have a teacher, Kristen, who teaches in first grade, and she had an amazing year of activism coming out of her inquiries, and she was really an inspiration to us. And I think that's one of the places that Michelle and I are really hoping to. There's some of our curricular units, you know, like Rainforest, that really lend itself to activism. So I think that's a place where we it makes me a little nervous, you know, because as with all these things, you don't know where it's going to go. But I like the idea. That's some place we want to play with this year. It's a push for us.
Well, and you know, it's the danger always of, you know, people worry about teachers bringing their own, you know, per political agendas or axe to grind and imposing them on the kids, and that you want to watch that. And yet, on the other hand, what are we doing this for? What are we doing this work for? What do we, you know, the kids that we're teaching aren't just widgets that we're turning out of the school factory. These are people who are going to be they're going to be our neighbors. They're going to live next door. They're going to be our coworkers. They're going to vote with us. And I want my neighbors and fellow citizens to be people who care and who think and who are aware of what's going on around them, or who have some experience in how to identify and solve problems. And I think when Steph and I wrote this book, this was one of the most important things that we had in mind. We wanted to take that last step on the continuum, you know, from remembering to building knowledge to caring, and where appropriate, taking action. And that's a huge part of what this book is all about.
And I think you've done it for sure.
Thanks.
As I said, you've inspired us to do it, so.
Well, you guys were so great when we came along. It's ridiculous for you to give us any credit at all, but thanks. Thanks for letting us ride your coattails and videotape you guys. And for the people listening to this, I'll say again that, you know, that Debbie and Michelle and others of their colleagues from Burley School are kind of the stars of a video that will be coming out November 1st of 2009 that kind of shows how inquiry circles look and feel and taste and smell in real classrooms in Chicago and elsewhere. So you guys are awesome. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Smokey. We're grateful for the opportunity.